Hello and welcome to Deluded, the Melbourne Demons podcast. Neats, we're fresh off the bye, back into it. How are you feeling?
Good, good. We just got back from Chicago. So we were there getting the vaccine, first dose of the Pfizer vaccine, which is very exciting.
Right.
And no side effects. And we also went to a wedding. Yeah. So, yeah, that was a nice little sojourn.
And you also had some emergency dental treatment, which conveniently coincided with the Collingwood loss.
Very conveniently. Well, people seem to think I was running away from a,
your responsibilities.
A negative dissection of the Collingwood loss. Believe me, I will never run away from criticism, guys. I will never, ever decline an opportunity.
Yeah, didn't front up for the review, you know, claimed
exactly.
a toothache.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I actually had to have an emergency wisdom tooth procedure, but feeling much better now.
Yeah. So
thank you for the well wishes, guys.
Were there that many well wishes?
There were a couple, okay.
So what did you think about the Collingwood game? We don't have to talk about it much. It feels like it was 2 years ago.
But what did I think of the Collingwood game? You know what? They just looked really tired, to be honest. They looked really – I agree when they kept talking about how they needed to wake up. They just looked sleepy and kind of sluggish. And Gawn was getting beaten by like a third gamer in Lynch.
Max
and,
Lynch, yeah. Yeah. That would never happen.
Never. No. I just felt like the whole team just looked a bit tired.
Yeah. And look, there's a lot of talk about how teams have worked out how to expose Melbourne, avoiding Lever and so on. I wouldn't read that much into it just from that game. You know, I think as we showed with the Bulldogs and the Lions game, we've got the ability to beat all the good teams when the intensity's there. And obviously, you don't want to drop games, but every team's going to drop games. I don't think it's anything we should worry about too much.
Really? So let's do a mid-season review because I don't think any Melbourne supporter could have predicted that we would only lose two games for the whole first half of the season. Though, equally, I'm not sure if any of us predicted that we would lose those two games to Adelaide and to Collingwood.
Yeah, it's been quite intriguing. But as I've said before, I just think the fact that this team is better against the good teams than the bad teams is something I've never seen before. And that's what means that I'm really heartened about this season. You know, like, I do think we have this elite level. And later this episode, we talked to Sam McClure from The Age, which is a great interview. And he makes a really interesting point, I think, about how he doesn't even think we've hit our peak, you know, and we do have a lot more left in the tank, it seems, in a lot of games.
I agree with that. I mean, I think there has been a lot of speculation about whether or not we've run out of puff too early. But the truth is the only game which I think for four quarters we comprehensively beat the opposition was the Bulldogs.
Right.
I thought that was our actual only full four-quarter performance for the year.
Right.
And I do think that Sam also makes a good point in the interview, and you guys will really enjoy it, I think, about just whether or not it's realistic to expect any team to be, you know, playing it at their absolute best for four quarters, given how even the competition is.
No, that's absolutely spot on. So I think for me, the huge factor will be our fitness levels because we don't want to have situations like that Collingwood game late in the season. And there is a risk that maybe we've peaked a little bit too early. And obviously, like all teams, there's an injury risk. But then again, I mean, I'm not sure if you saw on the weekend, it's that Mitch Duncan went down for Geelong for pretty much the rest of the season, which is huge. Robbie Gray went down for a long time. At the moment, I'd say we've got to be close to the most healthy top six team, right?
We're very, very lucky in that department and fingers crossed that it continues.
Viney coming back this week.
Yeah, very exciting.
Yeah. So I think we're in pretty good shape. I mean, you really can't ask more from the D's at this point. We've got a bit of an interesting test now because we've got Essendon coming up, West Coast, Port Adelaide, I believe, in the next few weeks.
These will be tough games. And I think that our strategy, particularly over the last few weeks, has been, you know, just allow teams to sort of get a little bit of a run on and then just come home, you know, really, really strong and sort of have this extraordinarily blistering last quarter. I don't know if that's the right approach that we could be continuing to take, but let's see them try and fix that this week.
Right. We'll go into the team in much more detail in our interview with Sam, but Neets, what are your reflections on Deluded's first half of the year?
You know, that's the most important mid-season review, really.
That's what the fans are here for.
I think so. I think we're killing it, kids. What do you think?
I don't know. I hope we're doing well. I hope you guys are enjoying the kind of deep dive interview approach. As regular listeners will know, we've tried many different outrageous schemes over the years, including me trying to be a statistician last year, which was boring for all concerned, especially you. I think this year we've had some pretty interesting interviews, we hope, though maybe it's just interesting to us.
Oh, I think we've killed it. No, I'm really proud of our efforts on the Deluded podcast this year.
Good self-praise.
You've got to give yourself a bit of a pump up, you know? Like, I think when the team's going well, you've got to enjoy the victories, but, you know that you're always you know, one poor episode away from from being relegated.
From the dustbin.
Exactly.
But please join our Facebook group and please send us your feedback. We'd love to know what you like, which interviews you're interested in, which topics you're interested in. You know, Nita and I are both kind of tentatively foraging into the media world at the moment in our own careers. So we're very interested in some of these kind of, you know, journalism, ethics kind of questions. But we'd love to know if you're interested in that. You know, we'd love to know really what you want to hear more of. So please let us know.
Totally. And also let us know how we can sort of expand our audience. One thing we're really interested in is reaching a larger market. And I appreciate that would probably mean posting maybe more than once a week in our Facebook group and maybe having an Instagram page that's comprised of different photos as opposed to every photo being the same, which was Kieran's original approach. But if you've got any marketing suggestions, slash if you would like to be our marketing intern, this is a real opportunity for you guys.
This is a new point, an intern. We have no money. How are we going to do have an intern?
I mean, lots of people need experience, okay? You could put this on your resume. Jeez, Kieran. Yeah.
Okay, well, if you want to put the Deleted Podcast on your CV for God knows what
reason. Why wouldn't they want to?
Okay.
There's much.
Please reach out. We'll take anyone, to be honest.
There's more speculative things you could put on your resume than the Deleted Podcast. This is a podcast that is hosted to chair people of the club.
That's true.
Chair people, is it the right word? Presidents.
I think that is the current term. Yeah, that's right. But Neats, enough about us. Sam McClure, you probably all know him from The Age, where he's probably the leading news hound right now.
He is, yeah.
And on Footy Classified, which he hosts. He's really all over the place. He hosts a radio show on SEN.
Yeah, he's on all platforms. And we had such a – I know we say this all the time, but we had a really great chat with him today.
Just a lovely guy.
Yeah.
And you don't get a sense of someone's personality when you just hear them on TV or the radio. He's just the most lovely, down-to-earth, humble, like fun guy. So
very much so.
It was just a lovely chat.
And I do think that news hounds tend to be hated a bit. Like we've found this as well, as in not hated in any meaningful sense, but you cop a lot of hate on Twitter or on social media when you're the person who's trying to expose the untruths that are being told by clubs. And so I think that there is this sort of not prejudice against news hounds. I don't want to put it that highly, but I suppose there's just this sort of, I think, knee-jerk, you know, opposition, I suppose, to news hounds.
Right, right. And what's interesting about him, as he says, is he's a little bit different to some of the kind of newsbreaker types, because I think he does think quite deeply about football ethics and what should be reported. And his dad was a very famous journalist as well. So, yeah, really interesting chat about a number of different things. Apologize a little bit for the audio quality, a combination of poor Mexican internet, Zoom, and a microphone that didn't work, but you'll forgive us this time around.
That's a fair culmination of problems.
We had it all today, but
it wasn't great, yeah. We actually didn't know if we'd even be able to do the entire interview.
But we managed to pull it off.
We soldiered on, Kieran, we did.
We soldiered on. But before we get into that, Neats, the Essendon game, which, as you know, every year is my grand final, my most hated team.
Why Essendon. Do you hate Essendon, Kieran?
Largely because many of our friends support Essendon, and unlike most good, generous friends, I want them to fail.
But many of our friends support Geelong. Why Essendon?
There's something about Essendon. Maybe it's the 2000 scars. Maybe it's when Essendon beat us in, I think it was the 2002 final series. Just growing up, a lot of the really defining kind of traumas in my life are associated with Essendon. You know, so I've loved the last 20 years. I think it's been great.
When they haven't won a final in like forever.
Yeah, exactly. The drug saga, all really good stuff. And but now they seem to be pretty good, to be honest. I'm a bit nervous about this game.
They've got a lot of promise. I will say that. They've got – it's funny because last year I think Rutten was really under the pump.
Yeah.
But this year you look at Essendon and how they're compiling their list and you go, this looks like a team that could really win a premiership.
Right. Parish and Merritt are pretty good competition
for Petrarca
and Oliver. I mean, I think we've got them covered because I think Gawn will hopefully beat Draper pretty easily, but it's a pretty solid midfield. And then, you know, like you said, Stringer.
He's just so much X factor. Yeah. Totally. And then these kids, they're really good. Nick Cox, Harrison Jones, Archie
Perkins.
Did you see
Harrison Jones' marking on the weekend? He is phenomenal. So that's going to be an interesting matchup. I don't know if you put, you probably put Petty on him, I would say, but it's a bit of a tricky matchup for us. I'm not sure who Lever would go to. Yeah. I don't know. I'm a bit nervous about it. I'm not sure about you.
I think that their midfield is quite good. And so that will be a really interesting test.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have stood up most of the tests this year. So I have faith and I'm predicting us to win by about 25. You?
Oof. I don't know. I think for me, it all comes down to the impact of the bye. Like in one way, that could definitely help us because we look very ready for the bye. But then again, maybe having a week off means you start a little bit slowly on the way up. So I don't know. Yeah, I'm gonna say that we'll narrowly win just because we have a little bit more experience across the ground. But I don't think this will be a crushing win by any means. But enough prognostication.
Good use of prognostication.
I have no idea why I use that
word. Why do you always use such strange words sometimes?
I don't know.
Talk like a normal person, Kieran.
Okay, I'll work on that for next week. But until then, go Dees.
Go Dees.
Sam McClure, welcome to the Deluded podcast.
Thanks, guys. Great to be here. Very excited.
So, Sam, you're obviously on a range of top rating shows around the country. We're very happy that you've agreed to join another top rating show, the Deluded podcast.
I'm not sure how many of the shows I am are on our top rating, although I shouldn't probably say that, but I'm very happy to be part of this podcast. I choose my podcast episodes very carefully, so I'm excited all the way from Mexico City, which is one of the cities in the world that I have yet to get to. I'm an avid traveler, obviously haven't been able to the last couple of years, which has killed me, but yeah, I'm sort of keen to know a little bit more about Mexico City as well.
It's a pretty phenomenal city. Unfortunately, the AFL culture isn't quite as developed here. It's a little bit like Gold Coast, actually. But it's so I'm not sure if expansion will extend quite to Mexico City yet, but it's pretty amazing, actually, I must say.
Definitely a growth corridor. Yeah.
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah, right. So you can't see the 19th franchise being selected at Mexico City over, you know, like Tasmania or a 13th in Perth.
I don't think it's in the cards right now.
No, maybe not just yet. But, you know, we're working on it. We're working on it. So, Sam, we have to ask you, every Melbourne supporter's worst nightmare right now is that our premiership year, and obviously we're just calling it the premiership year already, right? But is that our premiership year will be cancelled because of COVID. How big a risk is that right now?
You know what? This is so funny to me because one of my best friends in the world who I do all my traveling with, Jack, he's diehard Melbourne. And my partner, Nisha, and I had a couple over because we're only allowed to have two people over at the moment in Melbourne on the weekend, Anna and Lockie, who are also, you know, like avid Dees fans. And between the three of them, there's no confidence at all, despite the fact where the Demons are. It's like, oh, well, you know, like we're still waiting for something to happen. And it's not even necessarily, you know, the form of the team. It could be like, you know, we better not walk under a ladder or like see a black cat or like better not play on Friday the 13th or like what's going to happen with COVID. It just seemed to be like all these, not excuses, but like all these possibilities of things that can go wrong. I think it just speaks to the tortured nature of Demon supporters the last half century. And hey, look, I grew up a Carlton supporter. I wish I didn't. And so I've had a taste of the failure as well. But no, look, I think we're going to get a season away, I think. I don't know if you guys caught up with the news that the two Sydney teams have now had to come down here to Harvick, Melbourne, which is quite ironic given that, you know, the nature of COVID-19 in Melbourne and how we sort of locked down at the click of a finger here. But I think, you know, touch wood, we should get a season away. It's been really sad that we haven't had crowds here in Melbourne. They're still waiting today. Hopefully it'll be 30 or 50% capacities. But no, I think all going okay at Demon Land.
What do you think the chances are, Sam, of the final series being played out of Victoria in the same way that it was last year?
Yeah, it's a good question. The honest answer is it's too hard to predict because it's just too hard to predict what's going to go on with this virus. It feels like we've got a reasonable handle on it now, although I thought that last year, and the vaccinations are so slow. So we're sort of at the mercy of the government a little bit. And our chief health officer, Brett Sutton, has sort of, you know, now forged a reputation of just shutting things down whenever he wants, which is not great, but yeah, look, in answer to your question, Nita, I think that there's a decent chance that it's out of Melbourne, you know, purely because of what happened last year, but we're all hoping and praying it's not. Mm.
So turning to what we do know, now we're kind of at the mid-season point of the season. Where do you think Melbourne sits relative to some of the other big contenders like Geelong? How do you rate Melbourne?
Yeah, I mean, So it's really interesting. In 2018, I was completely on board the Melbourne bandwagon, even before it felt like it got going. Because just when they play their best footy, they're just so hard to stop. And then it looked like it was an aberration the last couple of years, that season. And now we've just seen the consistency shine through. And it's so easy to see that the talent that they've got. And they've showed now over the course of nearly two-thirds of a season that their best is going to be as good, if not better, than anyone's. I actually didn't mind the performance against Collingwood because they just looked half asleep. They looked like a team ready for a break. And for it to happen against an average side who were really hungry and trying to send off their coach, you know, like I don't think it was the worst loss in the history. They had a really healthy percentage. I think, yeah, for me, they're equal top seed. I couldn't put anyone past them at the moment.
That's interesting because, you know, one thing we've noticed and obviously the latent pessimism of Melbourne supporters is definitely coming to the surface in some ways, but we've lost to two teams that really did expose our slow starts and our over-reliance in some ways on Jake Lever's intercept marking. Against North Melbourne, we started off pretty slow. Against the Swans, we started off pretty slow. We've actually started off slow a few times now. Do you think that teams are starting to work us out?
No, actually, I don't think so. I actually personally think like starts and spurts are overrated in sport, not just footy. I think the best teams play their best footy for longest and they have the ability to stop the opposition if and when they get momentum runs the best. Like that, you know, in very simplistic terms, how I've viewed sport across many different sports is just that. It's, you know, if a team starts badly, it really doesn't matter if they end up winning. There's plenty of records of tennis players who have poor first set records, but ultimately you can't beat them over three sets or in a slam, you can't beat them over five sets. There are plenty of soccer sides that often concede the first goal and come back and win. It really depends on the type of group that you have. Interestingly enough, slow starts only tend to be talked about when teams lose from those positions. So, I mean, it's interesting that you guys are talking about slow starts. I think most of those games you came back and won. And Simon Goodwin has, even when they weren't going well, has actually proven himself to be a coach that's not afraid of changing things at halftime. I think even the first half of 2018, he was able to do that. And I know that the difference between Melbourne's best and their worst tends to be bigger than the gap tends to be bigger than most clubs, or historically it has been. But no, I don't think teams have worked Melbourne out yet. And I actually think Melbourne's best is yet to come. You know, like, you know, God help the competition if they hit their straps for four quarters, because we've seen, you know, the type of damage that Richmond can do over the years when they do that, the type of damage that Hawthorn can do. Now, I'm not saying that Melbourne have anywhere reached those two sides. They've both won three flags in the last 15 years, Hawthorn four. But, yeah, I think Melbourne's best is going to be better than most people's best. And if they can stop the opposition from having their momentum for as long, they're going to go deep into September.
That's an interesting point. I mean, I felt like we played four quarters and we played our absolute best against the Dogs. I felt like the second half against Brisbane, I don't think we could have played any better, but again, we started really poorly. But aside from the Dogs game, I don't actually think, I agree with you, I don't actually think we played four quarters of brilliance this year. I'm not sure what you guys think.
I agree with that. And maybe that's a little bit Richmond-esque as well, because I don't think Richmond's very rarely a team that played all four quarters, but they just have this ability to blow teams apart. And I think that's the kind of hallmark, it seems, this year.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, yeah, just getting back to my point before, you know, like the whole playing your best for four quarters is such an unrealistic thing. You know, when you talk to players, there's just four quarters is more about playing consistently for four quarters and making sure that, okay, you know, halfway through the second quarter, this team is getting a run on, let's defend. Like that's part of four quarters. Four quarters of an absolute onslaught very rarely happens because the competition is so even. I mean, really, apart from North Melbourne, who, you know, basically turned over their entire list, and Gold Coast, who are a different story, probably need a whole podcast to talk about Gold Coast. The competition is just so even that, you know, like four quarter efforts only exist in so far as getting the best out of your momentum and trying to halt the opposition's momentum.
Sam, there's obviously been a lot of stars for Melbourne this year. Who do you think is the most important player, the player we'd find hardest to replace if they went down?
Oh, it's a good question. I mean, the obvious answers are Petrarca, Oliver and Gawn. But if you're asking who would be the hardest to replace, you know, like I always get nervous if Stephen May's not playing because he is a real leader down back. He's very pivotal in the air but also on the ground. And I feel like he's second captain for the team defensively. And if you've seen some of behind the goals vision that Jared Healy's been playing on the couch, you know, like May is just so important for them structurally. You know, like it's him or Petrarca for me. I mean, the things that Petrarca does because he's that hybrid that can go forward and he's so important from centre bounces. I know Oliver does heaps of work inside and, you know, Gawn's really important as well. But, yeah, I think I really love the story about Stephen May because I thought he was – the stuff that was reported on him when he first arrived was fairly harsh. I know that he was unfit, but he was going through a fair bit of stuff personally. You know, he boarded at Melbourne Grammar as an Indigenous kid, then gets sent up to the Gold Coast, you know, playing for a team that gets belted every week. He's come back here, he's had to earn his stripes, and now he's one of the most important players at Melbourne. And I'm really looking forward to seeing him in a final series.
Sam, I'm interested in what you say there about, you know, thinking that the reporting was fairly harsh on Stephen May, given the personal circumstances he was going through. Do you think the media generally is quite harsh on players, either with the benefit of the fact that, you know, they're in very stressful jobs and often have personal things going on behind the scenes?
Totally. Totally, Nita. Like, it's something that has really come to fruition for me the last couple of years, and maybe that's part of getting older and realizing that you're not an invincible 23-year-old anymore. But I think we're way too harsh on players. You know, like, if you look at it in context, a lot of these guys have played football from a very young age. It's the be-all and end-all for them. A lot of them don't have necessarily the education other people do because they go into a workplace from a very young age. And, you know, the average wage of an AFL footballer is more than $300,000 a year. Now, you know, even high-flying lawyers don't get to that stage at 18 or 19. And then we're talking about, you know, an average. So, yeah, you throw personal circumstances in, you throw different backgrounds, you throw different environments, you throw in the fact that a lot of these clubs aren't as good at producing cultures as they say they are or that they would like to be. I think we were way too harsh on players. And, you know, Stephen May, someone taking a photo of Stephen May having a beer on a Sunday because, you know, he had a hamstring injury and it turning into this huge ordeal, I think was a really poor reflection on where the media has got to. And it's, you know, it's the gotcha, clickbait, let's just milk this for all it's worth mentality. And I think that we've really entered a dangerous space in the media. And, you know, like no wonder some young kids coming through don't want to talk to the media because you either get smashed for being too honest or you get smashed for not saying enough. Yeah, I mean, you're probably getting a little bit off track at the moment, but yeah, I have a very strong take on the responsibility that reporters have to players because ultimately there is no going to the players. The media like to think they're very important because 50% of money in the game comes from the media. The AFL like to think that they're really important because they run the league. The clubs like to think they're really important, but there is no game without the players.
So, Sam, how do you navigate that tension in your role? Because obviously you are someone who breaks a lot of news. You're on Footy Classified, which is kind of a bit of a news-driving type of show. Do you find that uncomfortable sometimes? Because I'm sure your professional obligation is to report anything like this because it would get huge eyeballs, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it's a great question, Kieran, and one that I think about every day. It's really difficult to navigate. I mean, ultimately, my sole responsibility is to my editor and to my readers or, you know, viewers, depending on the medium, or listeners, But so the one thing I often hear people say is, well, you can't pick and choose with stories. You know, it's, you either have to report something one day and if it happens the next day, you have to report it again. It's that couldn't be further from the truth. And this is just a personal, you know, opinion, and I'm speaking from experience here, but my entire job is picking and choosing. You know, like Stephen May having a beer on a Sunday, I could not care less about, given the circumstances that he was going through at the time. You know, if we wanted to turn it into this 24-hour big story and then, you know, we have to investigate whether Melbourne are investigating and then, you know, like, is he going to have a punishment? It's a flash in the pan story. If we're talking about, you know, a systemic doping system, for lack of a better example, that was going on through Essendon, you know, despite the fact that that's really uncomfortable and, yes, it's harsh on players and it's affecting people's lives and it's people are losing careers, but it's important. It's people deserve to know about that sort of situation that is going on. And that's why you saw some of the depth of the reporting. And I thought journalism was in a really good place back then. But yeah, the whole job is picking and choosing. And I don't feel bad about that. And I don't feel like I have to explain myself to my employers about that, is that, you know, there'll be reporters that choose to report some things and reporters that choose to let some things go.
No, it's a very interesting discussion. I think it's, you know, as we've noticed, the AFL media has become a lot more clickbaity. And a part of me sits there thinking, you know, much like a lot of people, like, is this really news? I mean, who really cares about the Melbourne players, you know,
pouring
milk all over each other, right? Or like, who cares about these stories? But then at the same time, I also have some sympathy for journalists in these positions, because they're trying to get, you know, more and more eyeballs on their stories. And ultimately the public is reading these stories, right? So as you saw, people were frustrated. Some Melbourne supporters were genuinely frustrated at Stephen May. Obviously they don't know his circumstances, which is, you know, probably unfair, but they sat there thinking, well, we paid a lot of money for this guy and he's shown up unfit and he's having a drink when he's, you know, unfit and injured. Are we getting our bang on our buck in terms of our investment, right? And when you think about football clubs as you know, member-owned, which they are, they're not privately owned, people sit there thinking, well, I'm investing my money in this, so why aren't the players, I suppose, subsequently investing their whole selves in this club, if that makes sense?
Yeah. Totally. And the, you know, the May example is just one of them. And I get the other side of it. I really do. I guess the interesting part of it is the question that we all ask ourselves before we click submit on a story, is that it used to be, is this story important for our readers? And does it reflect the brand of our organization? Now the question just seems to be, are people going to click on it? And I think that has really diluted the quality of some of the stuff that's going out. And when you've got media organizations offering bonuses to journalists for how many clicks they get, what do you expect is going to be, you know, the type of stuff that goes out there? You know, I've tried so many times to, like, cold turkey just go off Twitter and just be like, nah, I'm not going to invest in this. I'm just going to, nah. But then I have to trawl through emails to get the same information. You know, it's just almost like a laziness for me. But I really believe, whether it's in 2 years, 5 years, 50 years, I think that we will crash in the media. I think that we will hit a wall, and I think that we will completely flip and go back and do full circle to the way it was. And I think that there'll be less stories printed, and I think that they'll go for quality over quantity, and that advertising will understand that, you know, because at the moment it's you know, the really basic inherent premise is, okay, well, we need to show advertisers that we're getting viewers on the website, therefore we need more viewers on the website. That's it. Whatever you put on there that gets more viewers, put it on there. That's it. I think that we can come up with a better system for that.
Well, back to the on-field for a moment, and maybe it's contradictory to now talk about a player who's struggling, but Sam Wiedemann has been struggling a little bit on-field this year. From all reports, you know, he's putting in all the effort, doing everything right, but it just has not clicked for him at all, and really hasn't for a while. Do you think he'll be at the D's next year? And if not, where do you think he would end up?
Yeah, great question. And I think very fair reason that we're talking about, you know, on-field performances, because that's ultimately what they're paid to do. Sam's been really struggling in a new system at the expense of someone like Tom McDonald, who was on the scrap heap last year and was up for grabs and is now, you know, borderline All-Australian. So in one way, it's a really good situation for Melbourne that they've got this amazingly slick and functional forward line, and yet you've got this young star that was at the game against Geelong in that final. He's best on ground at halftime. He's playing unbelievably. He's struggling, and Ben Brown can't get a game, and yet they're top of the ladder in a game clear. Or sorry, they're second on the ladder. I may have jumped the gun there. I can't believe I'm talking about this. Of course, they are top of the ladder. Yep.
No, game clear.
I knew you guys would be aware of this. So will Sam Wiedemann be there? I would struggle to believe that both Wiedemann and Brown will be there next year because, you know, I don't think either of them are the type of player that's going to be happy playing twos. And fair enough, you know, they're both quality forwards. And Ben was brought to the club probably just before the whole game sort of changed, which the Demons weren't to know. So, yeah, pretty good problem to have when you're top of the ladder.
Sam, one thing that seems a little bit more clear and a little bit less speculative from last year is your reporting about Clayton Oliver. And you said, I think, on Footy Classified that he was definitely keen to leave Melbourne last year. He met with David Teague. What was it that kept him at the D's?
Yeah, it's interesting that he met with David Teague and yet neither party sort of seemed to go on with it. I think the fact that he was contracted and Carlton just in the back of their mind knew that Melbourne would have wanted so much for him, which is completely fair enough. They probably just felt that it wasn't worth it and, you know, coming to being out of contract this year. And so they just let it go for one more year. But, you know, I always find, you know, we were talking about earlier in the podcast, you know, games and momentum and how things can change quickly. Think about how quickly things can change at footy clubs over the course of weeks. You know, Melbourne at the start of the year, it was Simon Goodwin's under pressure. Is this Melbourne team gonna live up to the hype? You know, have they got the right mix? Tom McDonald's still there. Is that going to work? What's going to happen with their forward line? Talk of you know, infighting that, you know, Petrarca and Oliver, you know, didn't get on as well as they should have as guys that played together as much as they do. Oliver trying to leave. And look at him now, top of the ladder and flying and Oliver re-signing. It's sort of similar to Essendon. Like, you think about the chat about them in January, complete basket case. Danaher's just left. Sard's just left. Bantage's just left. Merritt's probably going to leave. And, you know, over the course of one draft and 14 weeks, the conversation has completely turned. So I was speaking to someone late last night, actually just before I went to bed, who reminded me of the old Lee Matthews-ism, which is never as good as it seems, it's never as bad as it seems. And I always believe in that. You know, things can turn around pretty quickly.
That is definitely true. I don't think any Melbourne supporter thought we would be in this position. I can honestly tell you at the start of the year when Ben Brown and Sam Wiedemann were both injured, I just sat there thinking, okay, well, we'll not be able to kick a winning score at all. We could be bottom four, given our inability to compete offensively. And look where we are now. So it's quite extraordinary. So let's talk about the Essendon game. Sam, I'm really interested in your take on this. We are probably the captains of the Luke Jackson bandwagon. We're like driving that bandwagon all the way to the Rising Star, you know, podium. Unfortunately, there seem to be these other Essendon players who are in the way by the names of Nick Cox and Harrison Jones. First question, how do you compare Jacko to those players at Essendon?
Well, I think we should probably put Jones to one side. I think he's a fair bit behind the other two, not to say that he's going to be a very good player because he looks like he's got lots of raw talent. I would have Jackson in front of Cox at the moment just because I think he's been more consistent at a team that's top of the ladder and Cox looks like he's going to be an absolute freak. But he's probably had slightly bigger highs but hasn't been as as consistent. You know, like if you're asking me who's going to be a better player, I have absolutely no idea. It's just too hard to tell. I think they're going to be different players. Cox looks like he's going to play more of an almost like a ruck rover or a wingman. The thing about Jackson that's really impressed me is his versatility, not just positionally, but like around the grounds. Like he seems to be, he's very clever, which for a big guy, I think is really important, particularly at that age. It's not just his marks, it's his taps, it's his ground ball work, it's his smarts around the contest. I really, really like him. And you can see, you know, what Melbourne were doing when in that draft, and even what they did with the picks with North Melbourne to make sure that they get Pickett. You know, like these are really important moments for footy clubs. And they're important when you miss them, but when you nail them, you have to really give clubs credit. And Jackson looks like he's going to be, you know, generational is maybe a bit strong, but he just looks like he's going to be such a significant figure for that footy club for the next decade and a half.
Oh, no, that's not strong enough, actually.
So Sam, Essendon for me is a bit of a danger game for the Ds because they do have some really elite talent. Two questions.
Here we go. Here comes the negativity. Here it comes. Danger game against Essendon. I was waiting for this. Top of the ladder and something's got danger games.
Oh, I've already penciled in the loss, to be honest. But who do you think should go to Jake, to Jake Stringer? Do you think we should send May to Stringer, number one? And number two, what would you do about Darcy Parrish? Do you think the kind of player that we should tag with maybe a Harms, or do we just back our midfield in to be able to be stronger than overall?
Yeah, I think you're on the money with both, to be honest. Like, I think May should take Stringer when he goes deep, and I think you should just back in your own midfield when Stringer starts in the middle. I really like Harms when he tags because he's a really good two-way runner and he can be quite dangerous with the footy as well. I think his best games have been doing that. And I think sometimes if he doesn't get given a role, he can sometimes get lost, particularly if he plays sort of mid-forward. So I would put Harms on Parrish because Parrish has been really damaging for the Bombers. I'd have May take Stringer when he goes deepest, and I'll just back in your system. I mean, Essendon have shown a really good ability to score, but the Demons now have a really rock-solid defence. I would just be backing in your system in the back six particularly.
And Sam, final question. One thing, again, with the pessimism potentially, but we've all been thrilled this year with Mark Williams and Adam Uze's performances in the coaching box. They've really, really changed the fate of this team in a lot of ways. Obviously, Mark Williams does wonderful work with the young Indigenous players. Uze is a kicking genius, and he's been working with Petrarca one-on-one on his goal kicking. And, you know, the two of them seem to have really, really revitalized the team this year, obviously along with Simon Goodwin. As you obviously are very well attuned to the coaching merry-go-round that's probably about to start, David Teague's under a lot of pressure. Nathan Buckley's already gone. Stuart Dew's potentially under a lot of pressure. Do you think we might lose either one or both of these two coaches this year?
Oh, Anita, great questions again. And a lot of this stuff is taking up a lot of my job. A lot of my job today will be on the phones trying to hunt this sort of information down. Look, Uze is, I think, completing his level four coaching, and the people in that course tell me that he's so far and beyond the best. He's way in front, so clearly he seems like a coach in waiting, whether that's this time around or he has to wait. Mark Williams, my gut feel is won't coach again, but that's not to say that he shouldn't, and I think he could, you know, if he has the right people around him, could be a really good asset, particularly for someone like a Collingwood. I just have a gut feel that so if you're asking what I think will happen, I don't think David Teague will coach Carlton next year. I think that Stuart Dew is facing an uphill battle to coach Gold Coast next year, and I wouldn't have thought that 6 weeks ago, but they've been really unimpressive and really disappointing, and they can't afford, I don't think, to stagnate the way that they are. And I am starting to believe that Sam Mitchell is going to be coaching somewhere next year. Now, whether that's Hawthorn or whether that ends up being someone like Collingwood or Carlton, I don't know. And, Yeah, I think the Buckley one is more on him a little bit. My gut fear would be that he'd probably want a year or two off. But having said that, like, that's a long time. You know, he's going to have 6 months off now. And if a Gold Coast or a Carlton came to him in September or October or whenever it is and asked the question, it'd be really interesting to see what his take was. I mean, let's not forget, this is a guy that was 90 seconds away from a flag. And then you've got Brad Scott, who everyone seems to forget about, but coached a really average list of consecutive prelims from outside the eight. I always find it fascinating that his name isn't more heavily linked to these jobs. So, yeah, the coaching merry-go-round, it's revving up.
Yeah. I personally think Mark Williams would just be a phenomenal, if not even senior coach, but just a developmental coach. I mean, what he's doing at all of these clubs like Richmond, Melbourne, I mean, he's just got such wonderful impact.
Yeah, he seems to. And I actually, it's funny, it's a story I've never really told, I don't think, publicly. So my first ever grand final that I went to was 2004. So my dad took me, sat in a half forward flank, and my dad was a journalist as well. And this was back in the day where sort of the world was a little bit more accessible, for want of a better term. And so I was snuck into the Port Adelaide winning rooms as dad's note taker. I was 13. And the first person sitting there on a chair at the back of the rooms was Mark Williams, premiership coach, just won a flag. He's on the phone, you know, probably to his family. And dad knew him and sort of said hello and shook his hand. And he genuinely got off the phone and waited, stopped his conversation and introduced himself to me. This is 13-year-old kid, never met before, 20 minutes after winning the flag. It's funny the things in life you never forget, you know, I just vividly remember that. And I just remember thinking he must be the most decent person to do that. You know, like, you probably wouldn't speak to anyone if you just won a flag, would you? Like, especially people that you've never met before. So he's so loved by the Melbourne players. It seems like he's just in his perfect niche at the moment. That's the only thing that I would say, is that Mark Williams doesn't necessarily need to be a senior coach. He certainly doesn't need to prove himself again to be valuable to a club. And I love that about the Melbourne role. You know, I love that it feels like they've got all their coaches humming. They've got Adam Mousset, and then they've got Jordan Lewis still working there part-time as a four-time premiership player. And, you know, Simon Goodwin seems like he's got this really nice place where he's like, I'm not going to micromanage everything. I'm going to let my assistants do the work that they need to do. I'm going to be the head, and I'm going to let my players coach on the field. And it's just a happy place at Dreamland at the moment. And I think they bloody deserve it, because I think they've been through enough, and I think they've drafted pretty well. And, you know, I back for them every week, to be honest. I mean, but mainly because the side that I back for loses every week, so I've got to back for someone.
We're glad to have you on board, Sam.
Yeah, what a great note to end on. You've really warmed our cynical Melbourne hearts. So thank you for that, Sam.
No worries, guys. It's been an absolute pleasure. I hope to be on again and one day meet you in Mexico City.
Always. Thanks fantastic. So much, Sam.